you by Satanic International Network. You're listening to The Ooze.
I'm on the stage, every foul wicked spirit is the host, The Ooze.
20 minutes, that door of the day, on The Ooze, right now.
On The Ooze, it's gonna fucking rock. Be there.
The whole point.
To really tap into adversarial time
necessitates a certain fortitude.
Now onto our show.
Hey, this is Jason Sproul, and we're here with your host, T.C. Downey, and you're listening to The Ooze. It's Sunday night, 11 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 10 p.m. Central Standard Time. And tonight, well, to be quite honest, we really don't have a show topic per se. I thought we would have this hour, we kind of just leave it open. We're going to talk about whatever for the next hour. Anything you might have on your mind that you want to talk about with the two of us, we'll be happy to go ahead and take your calls. The number to call in is 347-989-1371. And there's been a lot going on, so there's a lot to talk about, a lot of different things, you know, in the news, in the media, with the country and everything else, and online, the different things that we're dealing with and everything, and in our personal lives, there's a bunch of stuff to talk about. So we're just going to spend the next hour just kind of talking it up, and this is in preparation for the next show. Takes a little bit more, it's a little bit more involved, and a little more prep and research has to be done for this next show. So this show, we're going to be taking it easy. So, TC, how you doing, man?
I'm doing all right, man. How are you? What the hell is the next show?
The next show, and let me see if I can get to it without messing everything up here. Bear with me just a moment. The next show has to do with basically lies that our teachers have told us. I want to give the exact title. But we're going to be talking about the education system, and we're going to be talking about the different things that we're told in school as, you know, historic or political or philosophical truths that are just blatant, outright lies. Let me see. It's pulling up here.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, okay. I remember seeing that.
Right. Lies they told us in school. And this is more than just the idea of we're being – that education is not about learning or thinking. It's about being programmed to be a good laborer, a good worker. It's more than just that, education being used to influence who we are so that our behaviors are predictable and our behaviors are manageable. We're going to be talking about blatant, outright lies that students to this day are still told by the education system in school that they're just historical fabrications. And there's a list of them. There's a whole bunch of different things that are considered common knowledge that are, in fact, outright lies. So it should be an entertaining show.
Yeah, absolutely. That sounds like it should be a lot of fun. Actually, one thing maybe I'd like to tap on if we run out of material is not necessarily just the blatant outright lies, but like, for instance, if I remember right, sometime last year, Texas was renewing the school curriculum, or, you know, their approved set of school books, and they were trying to decide, you know, what information was going into it and whatever. I saw some kind of an article where they made mention that they were leaving most of the historical references to Thomas Jefferson completely out of the history books. So that's something else that, you know, I guess it's, in my opinion, relative to what you're talking about, because it perpetuates those blatant lies?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And the spin that goes into the education system, this is really something we should save for the next show, but the spin that goes into our education system, and the reason that it's a big deal, why Texas puts in their textbooks is important, is because when we set the standard for the textbooks as a state, that tends to be what the rest of the union also purchases for textbooks. So we determine, you know, the literature, the books that are going to be read in other schools in other states. I don't know if it's because we order more books or whatever. It's funny because my kid never brings a book home from school. But yeah, there was a whole bunch of different things going on with the Texas books, especially with history. History's always being spun. They wanted more of an Islamic influence in the book. They wanted more of a Hispanic historical preference in the book. And of course, that means, you know, they want to go ahead and take away from the founding fathers and the reality of, you know, not just Thomas Jefferson, and what he was about, both good and bad, but all the founding fathers. They wanted to kind of limit and rewrite the historical, you know, data on what these people were. Again, just to make sure that they're influencing the way that young people think, so that 10 years down the road, they know who they're going to vote for. Their behavior is predictable.
Right, right. So the information that they're giving is pertinent to the end result. That's kind of interesting. Yeah, let's do definitely save any of the rest of the material on this for next week's show, because I think that'll make it a bang-up show.
Right on. Well, and like I said, tonight we're just kind of going to be bullshitting, basically. We're going to be shooting shit back and forth, and a lot's gone on, like I said, in the last week. But you know what, man? I think we were engaged in a pretty interesting conversation before we came on the show. I think we should go ahead and bring that up, and we'll talk that up for a few minutes.
All right, that's good.
You mentioned that you wanted to kind of take on the idea, the difference, or, you know, to explore and delineate the differences between Satanism and Luciferianism, whether or not there is actually a difference at all, whether it's just, you know, some people feel good about calling themselves Luciferianism, that they feel more elite by calling themselves a follower of Lucifer rather than a follower of Satanism. And I don't know if I was right about, or if I'm wrong about this or not, but you were under the impression that it's all basically the same thing. And, you know, the forms are the same, a lot of the rituals, you know, we share a lot of rituals, we share a lot of philosophical ideals. The foundation all seems to be the same when you talk about the modern expressions of both Satanism and Luciferianism.
Right on. Well, actually, you only misquoted me a little bit, as in I'm not necessarily going to explore the differences between there. I'm going to concretely put the differences between there, which is what I was kind of getting to explain to you. I've decided I'm taking over Luciferianism. I think Michael Ford fails. I think anybody I've seen try to put any kind of information out there on it, short of Albert Pike even, and to some extent he fails, but they fail. They fail in giving a good measure of a different archetype. And I mean, I personally do believe there's a distinct difference between the Lucifer concept and the Satan concept. And you actually, just before we started going on the air, you actually, you made mention that Lucifer in pre-Christian context, in your opinion, was more Christ-like than Satan-like, which, you know, that to me kind of gives a, you know, it gives it a couple of things that I kind of sort of do associate with the image myself, and I'm really not quite sure. I do know that I've come up with some kind of interesting concepts, you know, like the idea of the morning star rising into the sky, and that actually being, you know, the beginning of the idea of the light bringer. It shows man as something that I don't think most of us realize we are, or at least that we can become, and that's we can become transpersonal beings, and we can have a state of mind called you know, transpersonal psychology. You know, you know, it's my thing for a while now that we should be a star-faring race.
Right.
Well, the downfall when you're trying to push this idea in Satanism itself is when you say that, hey, even though we're all different, even though we're all individuals, we all should be working, you know, together towards this something, which is just to get the hell off of this rock in case, you know, the one in a billion probability actually strikes, you know, and the earth hits the lotto, so to speak, you know?
Yeah.
And that's it. We're done. So I got to thinking about this, and, you know, the idea of the star rising into the sky, trying to rise above the heavens, you know, to the highest throne, it's a symbol for what man should be doing and becoming, you know, transpersonal.
Mm-hmm.
So then I started thinking about it in terms of transpersonal psychology, and I started, you know, getting more into like Sigmund Freud, and I'm trying to think of some of the other people, Timothy Leary, Carl Jung. You know, these are all people, Abraham Maslow, these are all people who were very much into the idea of transpersonal psychology. As a matter of fact, Leary gave eight circuits of the brain or something like that. And let me see what the hell this thing's called. I've actually got it referenced on a page. It's eight circuit model of consciousness. Now, here's what's interesting. I've been talking to you personally for a while about my theory that the Enneagram or the law of octaves is actually different models of consciousness. Well, check this out. There's eight models of consciousness here. The first model of consciousness is the biosurvival circuit, which would mirror Gurdjieff's microbe world. The second one is the emotional territorial circuit, which would mirror Gurdjieff's emotional man, which was the, if I remember right, tradocosm, the primitive man. The next one would be the dextrosymbolic, which actually would kind of skip over the earthly man or the higher intellect man. Well, no, actually, maybe it would fit with the higher intellect man, which is the third. And then the fifth one would be the ethical social circuit. So what's really interesting about these, and I could go through the other four, but they all seem to correlate with this model that Gurdjieff already built. And the ideas all actually exist even on the same thing. So what he does is he actually divides these into two separate sets of four. The first set of four is the left hemisphere of your brain, and it's all your basic survival functions and everything you need to actually exist and keep yourself alive, where the obviously the right side of your brain is then where, you know, all the creativity takes place and you know, you get into more complex type of abstracts and stuff like that. And when you actually line this up against the Enneagram, you see that that four and one actually overlap. And so you have your first and your eighth in the same spot, which is where it would be on the Enneagram. And each of these modes kind of, you know, they work together in different models of consciousness. So this is just some of the stuff I've been throwing around, and kind of thinking of different ways that it actually relates to the Lucifer story. Some of the other things that I think that maybe should be drawn from that is, you know, the pick yourself back up, dust yourself off, and get back on the bike, so to speak, mentality. So it's just stuff I've been batting around, and I was kind of just bouncing it off of you before the show.
Right, and like we were talking about, as far as Luciferianism is concerned, when you get outside of the Christian mythology, the way that the Luciferian concept was kind of co-opted by Christianity. Not to say anything negative necessarily about Christianity. This is just part of the process. You know, in time, things happen like this. And I can tell you the story about how Lucifer got changed from a name of the Messiah, a name for Jesus Christ or whoever the Messiah may have been, to a negative principle. I mean, it's an interesting story in and of itself. But the studies I've done of pre-Christian mythology and the life of, you know, Jesus of Nazareth, John the Baptist, even the mythological figure, you know, Simon Magus, who may or may not have been an actual person, Judas Iscariot, those different characters, there's a strong indication historically that these folks were Luciferians, as, you know, we're moving towards this idea that it's about achieving human potential, and the message that was, first of all, as a human being, we're capable of much more than what we're led to believe, what we experience without any specific training, without any real focus, without any real intent. In in addition, when we combine what one individual can do with another individual, what we can do as a group, what we can do as a species, all of that based on, and this is, I mean, it's weird. This is kind of like, you know, it's, here we are, we both consider ourselves Satanists, but there's a message there in these statements when you actually look at the teachings of Christ, the teachings of John the Baptist, outside of the institution of Christianity. You begin to see these very Luciferian ideals about achieving your potential, seeking perfection, seeking the most that you can gain from yourself, you know, working with others. And again, as I said, it's drawn a lot from the idea of these solar entities, the Apollonian deities, Mithras, and things like that. But yeah, there's a lot going on in Luciferianism that isn't properly expressed by folks like Michael Ford, who I do have some respect for Michael Ford, but he takes it to a very, very dark place, and that's not where it originated.
No, it's not. Another thing I thought was kind of interesting, the whole concept that you're talking about is transpersonal being, achieving outside of what you are at maximum capability of being able to do. It's those moments of super force that happen, what would Gurdjieff call it? He would call it a moment of great effort, right?
Right, or a shock.
Or a shock, yes, absolutely. Now, here's another kind of quirky correlation. Apparently, transpersonal psychology is regarded as being the fourth wave of psychology.
Right on.
And it lines directly up with a lot of the stuff that Gurdjieff was teaching. So it's interesting. What's really kind of neat to me is there's a lot of things that go on here that, well, you know, the things that I hear some people who identify as a Satanist talking about, you know, doing things collectively as a group, doing things, you know, to work towards some kind of a greater goal. And I know that that typically is frowned upon, but there are folks that, you know, they want to do something with the knowledge that they've achieved. They want to work towards something and feel like their life is wielding some form of crop, you know.
Right. And I think that in general, there's a type of person who moves towards or recognizes that as an individual, there are limits. As an individual, there is only so much that one could accomplish. And if you start thinking on a larger scale, exactly what you were talking about as a species, that we need to become a star-bearing species. Otherwise, I mean, we risk, as Stephen Hawking has pointed out, being annihilated by, when you say that hitting the lottery, I think that kind of overblows the probability because it's bound to happen. It's a certainty that given enough time, some sort of celestial disaster is going to occur. And if our species is bound to just one rock in space, well, that's the end of us.
Right. Well, that's, to be honest with you, when I said it was hitting the lottery, I kind of did leave out the fact that, you know, the thing about playing the lottery is if you play it every day over a long enough period in time, the odds of you hitting increase exponentially. I forget what the formula actually is, but the odds of it are actually a lot better in your favor than, you know, it seems, because when they figure these statistics out, you know, one in a million or whatever it is, the chances are, they're only figuring it out for that particular game. They're not figuring it out playing the same set of numbers or whatever over an extended period of time or the person's actual re-up, if you know what I mean.
Right, well, yeah, it's simple arithmetic, basically. If you've got a 1 in a million chance of hitting something, well, if you do it twice, you've got a 2 in a million chance at that point. So it's just, you're exactly right. Your odds are going to increase. But the thing is, with a celestial disaster, what we're talking about, we already are aware that this planet has been struck by objects that would have pretty much wiped everything out or came very damn close to it. So it's not a matter of, you know, if we're going to have that kind of thing happen, but when. And there's other arguments you can make towards the idea of, you know, working as a unit, working as a group towards a larger goal. I actually blogged about something like this. I blogged about community and how this is the next phase of organizations, spiritual and philosophical organizations on the internet. Now, right now, again, I've been harping on this for a good month now, that a lot of us spend way too much of our lives on the internet. Too much of what we need to do or what we try to accomplish is bound on the internet, and nothing really is happening in reality. We're not making any steps, you know, taking any steps in reality. What's cool with that I'm seeing going on now is that, like, you've got the Satanic International Network. They've established this gathering section on their website where you can actually hook up with other like-minded folks in different regions. So if you wanted to, you know, you announced that you're going to be at some event in your city or whatever, and if somebody else wants to go to that event and meet you there, they can do that. Or like we're going to be doing here in Austin on Walpurgisnacht, April 30th, we're having a barbecue at my place. We're going to be hanging out, listening to some tunes, drinking some beers, and eating some burgers and brats or whatever, and just kind of bullshit and seeing who shows up. And not that there's some agenda, not that there's some sort of political goal or anything, but it'll be interesting just to see what happens when, if we start exchanging ideas on a regular basis, face-to-face, rather than through the facade of virtual reality, what might be accomplished or how we might benefit, even if it's just we feel a little bit more connectivity to our, you know, fellow man, and feel like we're not all by ourselves out there going toe-to-toe with the mainstream, you know, thought process.
Right on. Right on. Yeah, I mean, I definitely see a relation. The thing that's interesting to me is how difficult it is to get people to even start small, like these gatherings that have gone on or are attempting to go on Sin. It's not something that hasn't been tried before, you know. We're just hoping, because Satanic International Network happens to be the prodigy of Satanic networks, that it may be the one to break the barrier and make this a more successful thing, you know?
Right, exactly. Because, yeah, I think the timing's there, too. You know, back in the late 90s or whatever with the United Order of Cerberus or whatever, you know, the Internet wasn't what it was, and the motivation to get out there and do something wasn't as strong, in my opinion. It just seems like as we move forward in time, there's just something pressing about, you know, 2011, 2012, 2013. I'm not putting any credence, you know, I don't personally put any credence into the Maya mythology, the 2012 thing. I know that you do a little bit, but it does seem to me that more and more people I talk to feel more and more pressed to, make something happen. Now, the other side of this, it might not be a matter of it being 2012 or whatever. It might be a matter of me just being, you know, I'm going to be 39 years old this year. And the people I deal with, the people I interact with, you know, they are older people. They are middle-aged or beyond people. It might just be the fact that we are in that sort of cycle in life where we recognize that, you know, oh, shit, this actually comes to an end at some point. I got to get some shit done.
Right on. Right. Yeah. I mean, it's actually really interesting to me when you think about the time frame that we actually have here to live. You know, it takes until you're starting to get older before you realize you don't have much time. You know, it's kind of got a silly cannotation to it. I'm not sure why it happens that way, but it does. Yeah,
death happens to the old. It doesn't happen to the young, and they're going to cure that shit before it actually happens to me, so I don't have to worry about it.
Right.
That's the attitude people have.
Right, and it's bullshit. I mean, let's, you know, just cut the fucking self-deceit there. You know, it's completely.
Yeah,
go ahead.
So even if there's no real thing that's going to happen in the future, say like around 2012 or whatever, the idea that you're going to spend 50, 60, 70 years, 80 years of life not making a mark, not, you know, especially as egotistical, if you will, that we Satanists or Luciferians or whatever can be, not making a mark, not making, creating some sort of monument in time to yourself so that when you look back after 80 years, you go, yeah, I made some shit happen, and the species is better for it, or my society is better for it, or even my subculture is better for it, whatever your realm of influence happens to be. When you're talking about these other folks who are like, no, I don't want to do that. No, I don't even get started. No, you can't tell me what to do. I mean, what they're saying is my realm of influence is just me, myself, and the idea that I might have a larger realm of influence scares the shit out of me. That's what those people are saying. They don't want to have a larger realm of influence beyond themselves, and they sure as shit don't want to see you have it make it happen, because then people look at them and go, what the fuck are you doing?
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right. It comes down to the fact that, you know, the person protesting, trying to make a difference in your life, doesn't have a sack. I mean, that's what it comes down to. They don't have the fucking intestinal fortitude to, you know, put up and do something. You know, that's why I throw, you know, mad respect to, like, Zach and you and the people that I know are doing things, because even though our efforts may be somewhat trivial, you know, in the end, it's still something.
Right. And that's, I mean, and like I said, there's just two different kinds of people. There's those kinds of people that, you know, that have, there's no awareness of the potential to have a larger realm of influence. The idea that they actually can work with other people, that they can actually change the way things are going. They don't want that responsibility. It's exactly what you said. They don't have the intestinal fortitude. They don't have whatever it takes. But then there's those people that are driven by whatever, you know, that splinter in the back of their mind that tells them that an ordinary life, a meaningless life, is not satisfactory. It is below the mark. It's not making the presence you need to be made, that just drives us. And fortunately, I see a lot of more people like that who are driven to make some sort of mark, than the folks who are like, you know what, fuck it, I don't care. And, as a matter of fact, not only don't I care, but I'm going to make sure that I let you know that you shouldn't care either.
Right on. Absolutely, and that's I think that's the first and most prominent battle that, you know, has to be taken up. You know, getting people to realize that, you know, if everybody did just a little bit of something, a whole lot more shit would get done.
Well, see, while I agree that would be great, if we could get everybody to realize that, I know that my time is short, and I don't have time to get everybody to convince everybody else to do that shit. So the fuckers that argue against that, I just write them off.
You know, right.
And this is an argument that we had in the Cult of Cthulhu, where, you know, Derek was saying that we got to hold out and wait for, you know, as many different people as possible and try to hold everybody's hand to get them going. You know, that's all fine and good, and if that's what you want to do, great. But my thing is, if you're not going to follow the example you see being made by other people, those people shouldn't wait around for you. They got shit to do. And there are enough people that are trying to do something that when they start to work together, shit happens, whether these other people do anything or not. So, yeah, I'm not out there trying to convince, I don't know, I'll name names, Dan Dredd, or others, you know, others like that, that, you know, they need to, you know, hook up with everybody. It's a waste of time. But the people who are interested in getting together and making some shit happen, those are the people I'm dealing with.
Right. And honestly, I know that the only way that you're going to change the mind of the people that are naysayers is to just consistently show them how it works, you know?
Right.
I mean, that's really the only way that's going to happen. So I guess, you know, forgive my little bit of zealousness previously, but I guess for me it's just something I'm passionate about. I see people who waste their fucking life every day, and it makes me sick, because only I'm going to get, you know what, from somewhere between 60 and 80 years if I'm lucky.
Right.
So shit. I'm sorry.
It's like, you know, we're both students of Gurdjieff and Uspensky, and this whole fourth wave thing, the work. And it's like Gurdjieff says, you know, there's only so much you can do. You can just put the information out there. You can just show the example. But you can't force somebody to wake up. You can't force somebody to recognize that time is short. And if they want to, you know, if they want to have some voice in the direction of their community, of their society, of their species or whatever, well, they need to make some shit happen. You know, contributing their little bit of genetic, you know, material or whatever just isn't sufficient. We're past that point as far as evolution is concerned where, you know, it's just the survival of the fittest anymore. It's going to be the survival of the smartest. It's going to be the survival of the most active and most willing to participate. And sadly, what we see in our society right now is more often than not, the most willing to participate also has to be the least desirable aspect of that society.
Right on. Right on, absolutely. I don't know, man. I mean, I'm kind of just... I've been so wrapped up in thinking about all this other crap that I was talking about earlier. I'm having a hard time, you know, coming up with what my next thought here is.
Well, and that's what this show's about. So, well, you know what? I'll go ahead and bring up the phone number. The phone number is 347-989-1371. This show, although it's gone in a bunch of different directions, Luciferianism, the fourth way, getting out there and doing something as a community, the importance of an individual reaching beyond themselves to really make something happen, the survival of the species. We mentioned Stephen Hawking. We mentioned, you know, Jack Gurdjieff, P.D. Ospensky. We'll mention, I'm sure, other people, Thomas Jefferson and a bunch of different folks. We really are just talking about whatever tonight. We didn't have any particular theme for the show. So one of the things I suggested is that if anybody had any questions for TC or I about any fucking thing, you know, whether it's, you know, the artwork, Creative Eye Studios, the Cult of Cthulhu, because I know we've kind of talked that out, what it is we're doing, you know, personally about, you know, these different projects we're engaged in, whatever, give us a call. We'll answer. We'll take any questions. And if we don't like your question, we'll just hang up on you. That's just kind of the way it'll work.
We'll ridicule them first, but we will hang up. Yeah, that's right. You got that. Real quick, while we're waiting for people to call in, because we want people to call in, there's a little follow button now on this page up towards the top and a little Facebook like button. You need to click those. That's how you show us support. That lets us know that the money me and Jason spend every month on this isn't going to waste, that you like what we're doing. If you need Jason's help negotiating your contract with Satan, the email address still is open. Sell your soul at fearthebeast.com. Just will put you right in touch with Jason. Small fee. I don't know. You want like what, a quarter of his soul?
Well, there's a processing fee. There's got to be a material processing fee. I give my help and advice for free. Okay, absolutely. When it comes to my brokering services for selling your soul to Satan and make sure that you maximize your contract, my services are absolutely 100% free. However, there is a processing fee for the paperwork. So the paperwork is going to cost you a little bit of money, but my services, what I offer you, is free.
Okay, so yeah, there it is. You got that right. I'm excited about the new layout of the Blog Talk Radio show. Do you like it, dude?
Yeah, I dig it. I see that I'm beholden now to coming up with a banner. I have the idea in my head. I have not had time to draw it because of the different shit that's been going on this weekend. But I have an idea that I think is going to kick ass. So look for that here in the next couple of days.
Awesome.
I dig it, the new layout.
Yeah, it's pretty sweet, man. The only problem is that you can't tell when that... Like before, the only way that you could tell if someone commented on one of your shows was by a little number of comments count on the front section there. But now you actually have to go to each show, open it up, and then you can see if there's comments or not. So that's one downside. But ultimately, I'm sure they'll figure that out.
Sure. So, let's see. Anyways, nobody wants to call in. All right, fine. Don't call in.
Yeah.
Well, we let me take it a different direction, because this has kind of been something that's been talked about in my household for the last week or so. The almost partial government shutdown that almost happened Friday night, that didn't happen. They reached a budget agreement. The Republicans in the Senate, the Democrats in the Senate, they came together and decided to cut like $38.9 billion off the fiscal budget for 2011. And kind of wanted to see what everybody thought about that. I wanted to point out that $38.9 billion, when you're talking about like a $1.9 trillion deficit, it's like pissing in the wind, basically. Totally fucking meaningless. And the fact that these soldiers and their families were facing potentially not having a paycheck, that they had to go through that shit when they're fighting three fucking wars, honestly pissed me off. As a former soldier myself, I thought that was ridiculous, that they were playing political fucking games with the military. But that's, you know, be that here nor there. Were you paying attention to any of that at all? The partial government shutdown?
Yeah, actually, it's been mentioned to me tritely in different conversations, and I did do a brief familiarity with it on the internet. I honestly kind of go into this auto stance with government anyways, and my auto stance is, yep, the government sucks. They're fucking it up. So,
go ahead.
Oh, no, please.
I was going to say, both parties are a bunch of ball-washing bastards, basically. You know, I usually line up on the conservative side of things, but this shit just kind of, I found irritating. It's like, you're really going to get all hardcore about Planned Parenthood and NPR? Why don't you just hold the Democrats to, you know, getting a balanced budget? Fuck the moral situation. And then the Democrats on the other side are going, oh, if the government shuts down, if we have this, it's a partial shutdown, first of all. Nobody's going to notice that the parks and the libraries are shut down. But these Democrats going, women are going to die because they can't get a fucking breast exam. I was like, come on, they can't wait 3 days, a week until the budget gets straight to get a breast exam that's really going to kill somebody? It was just total fucking political posturing. So, but before we go any further than that, let me go ahead and bring somebody on the line here. Hang on a second. 661 area code, you are on the use of Talk Your Brain.
What's up, guys? Dark Fool here.
What's going on, man?
Not a whole lot, man. I just figured since the show was about stuff, I do have a couple questions. But while we're throwing stuff out there, today, I'm not sure if you guys were aware of a YouTube user named Thunderfoot. He started a little, deleting the Quran off of your hard drive day as a form of protest.
Okay. I think I saw something like that.
Yeah. Basically, I mean, it was just to, I mean, because there was a lot of riots that happened in Afghanistan, I believe, that it was due to the fact that that pastor had burned a Bible, and then they were calling for his blood, and then they stormed the UN, and they killed about 20 people. It was ridiculous. So rather than physically burn a Quran, he loaded a hard drive full of just Qurans and multiple copies and just deleted it and showed how in the digital age it's just ridiculous that, you know, these absurd demands by these extremists. You know, you get what I mean.
Right. Well, the thing that you have to keep in mind with the Middle East and with these people is that the difference in mentality is that here we are in 2011, and these people still exist as they did in the 15, 16, and 1700s, where it was appropriate to kill. There's no value of life. And they, you know, they would make the claim that we have no understanding of what the value of life means. But you know what? We don't go around killing fucking people because somebody burns a satanic Bible or a Christian Bible or any of that shit. Now these assholes in Florida, these pastors or whatever that went out there and did this shit just to, you know, continue to make their name for themselves and everything else. I mean, knowing what was going to happen or knowing what could happen, that's bullshit in my opinion too. But freedom of speech and all that fucking shit. But the only people to be blamed for the deaths in the Middle East and the ridiculousness in the Middle East are the fucking people of the Middle East. These Muslims.
Absolutely.
And when you say extremist to me, what I hear is devout follower of Islam. Okay, if you are a devout follower of Islam, well then you're an extremist basically. if you follow the Islam to the T, you're a devout follower. Well, then what does your book tell you to do? Kill the infidel if you can't convert them, and that's what's going on.
Pretty much, yeah. Pretty much, man.
But you had some questions.
Yeah. Well, first of all, in response to that, I did a little video that I would just like to plug right there. You know, it was my response to the whole thing. I mean, but anyways, all that aside, yeah. I just recently, tonight, before I went to Sin, I did actually check out the Cult of Cthulhu forum in the chat, and it was completely dead at this time. And I'm just wondering if you guys think, what with the whole Whack Wall account being made, I mean, it's obvious that it's a retaliation or that it's a reaction to the success of Sin, but do you guys honestly think that Sin has some competition?
Yeah. Oh, as a matter of fact, even though Zach didn't follow my advice to Zach was just, whatever, let him play. You know, he's not even in the same pond as us.
I think it's funny. If Derek would open his eyes and look around and see what happened, he's got, I don't know how many fucking, you know, he's got 1,000 or so registered members in his Cult of Cthulhu forum, the one that he had before. And when he says, come on, troops, we're going over to Whack Wall, and we're going to go have our own little forum just like Sin has. And you're absolutely right. They wanted something that looked, you know, they wanted something exactly like Sin. And why did they want it? I don't think it was a matter of, you know, spite or anything else. I think they saw that what was going on with Sin was working, that it rocks.
Right,
that it's,
right.
You know, that's a cool place to be. They wanted that for themselves, and when Derek goes, come on, troops, we're going this way, and 12 people go, 15 people go, you know, 30 people go of these, you know, 1,000 or so registered members in this forum. And this has been something, I mean, TC and I pointed out this out to him when we were involved in it, that there needs to start being some stratification, and you need to start focusing on the folks that are worth the shit rather than, you know, pretending that there's 1,000 people actually paying attention to what's going on, because there's not. Obviously, there's not. I think it's a waste
right.
of time.
And behind forums and everything, people can play keyboard warrior behind forums, but they can't show their face on camera or at least get their voice up there.
Right, right. And it's redundant, in my opinion. I mean, it just showed how small that's the only thing that accomplished. It doesn't do anything for the Cult of Cthulhu. It just shows how few people are actually participating in that Cult of Cthulhu. And
I've popped in and out of the forums. I mean, like, I've probably participated here and there. You know, I mean, you know, like, when it came to, like, an important thing, like, remember the Warlock Asylum debate that we had on the U's and stuff like that, I would pop on the forum to give my feedback as far as that happened. So, I mean, I haven't been exactly 100% on the forum, but I haven't exactly been 100% off of it either, if you catch my meaning. So, I mean, as far as all of this is just, you know, I'm asking all this for inquiry's sake, not because I have any sort of agenda.
Sure. Well, I'm actually on the Cult of Cthulhu forum at least once a week. Every Sunday, I upload Jason's Sunday sermon, and it's always about the fourth way or always something related to the work. And my intention is to give an alternative, you know, version, basically, of the shit that Derek pushes as the work. And he's admitted that, you know, the work that he describes is not necessarily, you know, the work of Gurgis or whatever. I try to stick pretty much close to what Gurgis pushes, what Gurgis' ideas were. So I'm just offering that information and putting it out there as an alternative. And sometimes, you know, people get interested, they have a conversation about it. Sometimes they don't even pay attention. That's all fine and good, but I want that information to be out there. And every once in a while, I'll plug, you know, Views or Creative Audio Studios or whatever. I mean, fuck it. If he's, you know, been on Sin doing that kind of thing, I figured, you know, what's good for the goose is good for the gander.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, did you have another question?
That's pretty much it for now. I mean, yeah, I'm just, it's a whatever night for me, dude. It's so,
right, right.
You guys have a great show.
Well, what did you think of, before you go, what did you think of his video, his YouTube video, where he basically called out Satanic International, the Satanic International Network?
You know what? I came across this video today. I haven't watched it yet. I've been horrible today. I've been just a lazy freaking bastard, as if you couldn't hear it already in my voice.
No, that's, I've been off the internet. I haven't fucking uploaded a video in a while on my channel, and I recently uploaded something on my Creative Bias Viewers channel. But yeah, I've been, you know, on an internet hiatus for a while, so I feel you, man.
Right. Yeah, you know what? It sucks too, because I had a bunch of work ready to be done for the book today, and then I hear last minute, no joke, last minute that a buddy of mine who was in the Army was back in town. I was like, ah, you know, it's like, what do you do? He's on leave for only a few hours. It's like, ah, shit, all right, fine. So I put it all on hold.
Yeah,
went to go see him all the way up in Pasadena.
Right on, very cool, man.
So yeah, so anyways, you guys, if I have any more questions, I'll call back in, man.
Right on.
All
right. Later.
Later. There's only 14 minutes left anyway, Jason. Me and you eat that for breakfast.
Yeah. We'll blow right through this shit. So the government, we talked to the government shutdown is what we, I think where we were going. And this, first of all, the partial shutdown. You know, when they call it a government shutdown, even that is bombastic, in my opinion. That it's not a government shutdown when you're going to tell me you're going to, it's not essential services for the government. You're going to shut down the libraries, you're going to shut down the parks, and the military, the FBI, you know, Social Security is still going to be in place, Medicare, Medicaid, all this shit's still going to be in place. Who's going to miss it? And I think that's something that the Democrats, in my opinion, were afraid of, is that if the government had actually shut down, a lot of these programs, these earmarks and everything else that they throw into these bills and everything, it would be obvious to the American people that the millions we're spending on this bullshit wasn't worth a damn. Nobody missed it.
Right on. That's exactly what they were afraid of, man. I mean, can you imagine the wake that people would be in when they went, oh, wait a minute? You know? I guess the only thing that might happen is if someone gets their food stamps card charged the first of every month and this shutdown was right then, they might have to wait, a couple of days before they get their money?
Right, exactly. And it's going to be hard for them, but then it's just going to be like, you know, why are you on food stamps anyways? You know, you might have a legitimate reason to be on food stamps, but that's something else that's been that we've been kicking around. I had a debate sort of on Facebook earlier this week at some point. This 23-year-old is going on about how the individual is too important in our society, that we care too much about the individual, and that, you know, we need to start thinking about the collective. We need to start thinking about the group. And I, you know, while that's all fine and good, I'm all for the collective getting together and doing shit. If the collective is not made of individuals who are self-sufficient, then the collective isn't worth much. And we were having this discussion back and forth, and part of the thing was, if you're, you know, you end up on food stamps and everything else, the question you have to ask yourself is, what incentive do you have once you're getting free money or free resources from the government? What incentive does anybody have to get off of that program? Especially when these programs are self-perpetuating bureaucracies. They want you to be on those programs. They want you to find ways to stay on those programs so that they continue to have a purpose. And
right.
She had no fucking answer. No answer whatsoever. You know,
yeah.
She's like, I don't know what it would take to motivate people to work. And then my question was, well, what happens? I mean, we're like at 48% of the population in the United States right now is on some sort of assistance program. What happens when we tip over the line, when we go to 51% of the population being on some assistance program, and it's a number of those, it's not the entire, you know, 48% is on total assistance where their entire resource, you know, set of resources come from the government, but what happens when we reach 25, 30, 35%, and somebody like you or me goes, you know what, it's better to be on fucking welfare than to have a job, and we just quit working.
Yeah,
how do you motivate us?
Right. How do you? That's a good question. To me, that's, you know, you got a double dose of baby powder before you laid in the world's biggest pimp slap with that, because there's just no argument to it.
Right. And it was. She had none. It was, like I said to her, she was, you know, all complaints and no solutions. I even offered the idea of participatory economics in government, you know, as a possible solution. and she didn't pick up on it. But again, I just, you know, here on the news, ladies and gentlemen, here on the news, we will solve all the world's problems. If the world leaders were to tune into us right now, or just listen to the archives, you don't have to tune into the live show. Don't call in. We don't want Obama or anybody else calling in like that. Just listen to the archives, and all the information you need to solve the world's problems, you know, including the gray alien thing, because we talked about that. It's all right there. All the information is right there. We will fix the world here on the news.
Right on, man. Absolutely. I mean, it seems so simple, doesn't it?
Yeah. Just apply a little bit of fucking rationale to it. Just apply a little bit of reason to it, and it'll all make sense. We will all work it out. You know, speaking of UFOs, I know we're going in a fucking 100 different directions tonight because it's not this show. Speaking of UFOs, there is a document being passed around right now that supposedly was from some FBI agent or somebody who was on duty during the Roswell event, okay, where it's the report taken from the Air Force at the time stating that three saucers had actually crashed, there was a number of saucers that actually crashed. They're all about 50 feet wide, and each had three pilots, and all the number three kept coming up for some reason, so they're all 3 feet tall or some shit like that. Apparently, the Freedom of Information Act has a document that basically supports Roswell being an alien event.
An alien event, really? What do you think of this? Do you think it's real?
I looked at the document. I mean, it's on the internet, man. It can be fabricated, okay? There were a lot of people that were providing, you know, other information saying that the names of the people that are actually on the document that you could see, because some of the information was actually blacked out, but the names of the document actually did refer to actual, you know, people on public record who worked for whatever government body this was, and you know, I think it was the FBI, or, you know, the equivalent body at that time. And that that this person, you know, was on public record as, you know, somebody of importance back then. So, you know, I just wrote it off, man. I just saw it and I was like, oh, look at that. You know, interesting. I'll talk about that on the news tonight.
You know, sometimes you have to worry though, because the utter ridiculousness of some of the stuff that you see really kind of puts the fear of God in you, because you know, if it's just too ridiculous, it has to be true.
Right. Yeah. Or is it stupid? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. It's just crazy. So I'm waiting, man, for the day that I sit next to somebody who flips their little reptile eyes at me real quick. Actually, no, man. I just want to avoid the grays. That's really the only thing that I'm asking.
Yeah. I'm not down with the whole handshake thing that they do, yeah.
Yeah. Keep me away from the fucking grays and we're good.
So, let's see, what else has been going on? I was telling you about my tattoo. I got a new tattoo tonight. My daughter did her first tattoo on an actual person on me tonight. It's a pretty simple design, this little cartoony skull that I got up on my shoulder now. We took video of her actually doing the tattoo and talked about what she was doing and everything else. And, I'm going to be putting that video together and it should be up on the Creative Body Studios video channel, sometime tomorrow. I'm sure it'll be all taken care of sometime tomorrow.
That'd be awesome.
Yeah. And it was, I'm pretty excited about it. I look in the mirror and I'm digging it. It's just simple. It's a line work, black line work and some heavy black shading. So no gray wash shading. We didn't get any of that. She was pretty traumatized, man, during the entire event. She's shaking and everything else. I think she was taking it harder than I was. And it was because, you know, Dad's sitting there going, you're doing it wrong. You're doing it wrong. You know, that kind of thing.
Right on.
But when she was all done with it, she was very proud of her work. And we took her to her mother's this evening. And she had normally, which is, you know, we don't even really stop the car. We just kind of kick her out as we roll by the place. But tonight she actually had to get out of the car, come upstairs, and show it off to her mom and everything. So she was pretty excited about it.
That's excellent, man. I mean, that really is. I look at Vanessa's artwork and just know that she was born to sling ink, dude.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now tell her, man, because she needs to hear that. She doesn't know what she wants to do right now. She's all over the place with what she wants to do artistically, or you know what she wants to do on my couch for the next 30 years or whatever. You know, she just doesn't have a clue. But I think she's got it in her head that she wants to be a tattoo artist. She realizes she's beginning to wake up to the idea that, you know, as a female tattoo artist, and this is going to be entirely sexist, but that's the way this fucking industry is. As a female tattoo artist, she is a huge draw to any tattoo shop she works at, and it's going to be nothing but tip money for her as far as her tattoo work is concerned.
Absolutely.
She's going to be huge. She's going to be able to live on tips. It's going to be ridiculous.
That is kind of ridiculous, and that's... I mean, all you need to do is just play the end of the show for her, man. But I mean, she's definitely got the skill to be a tattoo artist. That the way she draws is just cartoony enough. You know what I mean?
Well, it relies heavily on lines, so she really has the idea of, you know, that you put a black outline around shit, and then she's, you know, she knows the shading and everything else. She understands all that, so. She's working on it, man. She's been doing the pigskin, and she doesn't know this yet. She doesn't listen to the show, so her birthday is on May 30th, and she's actually getting her own little tattoo set up. So she's having power supply, the clip cord, foot pedal machines, the whole thing. I've even got some friends already kind of, you know, talking about when she's going to actually start tattooing for real. And it's coming, so I expect hopefully by the end of summer she'll actually be tattooing for money.
That's awesome. That's absolutely awesome. Cool. Very cool. Three minutes left, man. Any last minute shit? I think I'm out of material.
Well, other than plugging next week's show, the Outbreak Edition, the Ooze, we're going to be talking about, I forgot the title of the show again, basically lies you've been told in school. We're going to be talking about the education system, but we're not going to be talking about just the way that they use political influence to kind of determine what the students are going to be thinking in the future and how students are programmed to be good laborers, you know, that it's not really education, you're not really learning to learn or learning to think, you're just absorbing a certain amount of information and a certain level of influence so that when you are out in the world as a laborer, your behavior is predictable and you can be well managed. What we're going to be talking about are a lot of the things that they blatantly lie to their students about, things that you've been lied to about in school. So some things that you may have thought were, you know, hard truth, hard facts, you know, that you were told by your teacher back in the third grade, we might be telling you next week we might be telling you some of that shit was bullshit.
Right on. Right on. Absolutely. It should be fun. I'm pumped up specifically the history bit, because I think that's where most of the bullshit happens. But I'll be interested to see what you come up with.
You in math, there's little bullshit. There's very little bullshit in math. And science, especially the hard sciences, there's not a lot of bullshit, although when you get into theory and everything else, you know, It leans one way or another politically, their pet theories and everything else. But when you're talking about history, or you're talking about, you know, psychology or sociology or anything else like that, there's definitely some political fucking sway going on there. And if your little kids are in school, like, you'll be coming up on this here pretty soon, TC. How old is your boy?
He'll be turning 5 next January.
Right. Well, when he comes back from kindergarten and tells you that the Indians lost their land to the white people, and that the Pilgrims were bad, and you know, who knows what else? Just a ridiculous amount of shit. Just be ready to sit there and go, you know, steer him straight. I've told my kids that you need to tell the teacher what she wants to hear to pass your test, but you think for yourself.
Right on. Cool. Well, I can throw the outro on and we can jump off of here, man.
Right on, man. I'll talk to you next week.
Talk to you next week, bro.
Later.
Thank you for listening to the opinions expressed by our guests or callers do not necessarily represent the opinions held by TC, Zach, Jason, Matt, or any other institution represented by them. If you have been offended by the production of this show, we are sorry for this real discretion goes. Tough luck. Special thanks to Dr. Rocky DeRoma for his contribution to this outro. The Ooze is the Creative Oddity Studios product and is presented by Titanic International Network as its official Blog Talk radio show. Why waste your time with those other guys?